seasonal greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up.
As we look back at some of the sporty highlights from 2016, three players won Grand Slam singles titles in men's tennis. Novak Djokovic won trophies at the first two major tournaments, the Australian Open and the French Open. Local favorite Andy Murray of Britain won his second Wimbledon title. And in this Olympic year, let's give Murray some Olympic props. After Wimbledon, Andy Murray traveled to Rio de Janeiro and won his second consecutive gold medal in men's singles. And in the year's final Grand Slam event, the U.S. Open, this Swiss player was victorious.
If you want to be the number one player in the world, you have to give everything. You have to accept to suffer because this Grand Slam was the most painful physically and mentally Grand Slam that I never played. What was clear was not to show anything. Keep fighting, give everything, and try to win it.
That's Stan Wawrinka, who won the U.S. Open men's singles title in New York City. In a nearly four-hour slugfest at Arthur Ashe Stadium, Wawrinka defeated Serbian star Novak Djokovic in four sets to win his third career Grand Slam title. The final score from New York, 6-7, 6-4, 7-5, and 6-3. Wawrinka also beat Djokovic in the final of last year's French Open. His other Grand Slam trophy came in 2014 when he beat Rafael Nadal of Spain in the final of the Australian Open. So Wawrinka is now a perfect 3-0 in Grand Slam finals. At the post-match news conference in New York, Wawrinka was asked about his plan for 2017.
The only plan is trying to push myself the maximum to be the best player I can. I'm not good enough to start the year and say, okay, I'm going to win a Grand Slam this year. No, I'm trying every day, day by day, practicing hard, trying every match to win. I think the result will come because I'm doing that every day, because I'm fighting with myself to improve, to be a better tennis player, because I have a great team behind me who's pushing me every day to try to be a better tennis player. And I think this year I'm playing way better than last year.
For his part, Novak Djokovic will have to settle for two Grand Slam titles this year, the Australian Open and the French Open. Djokovic says he lost his nerves in the important moments against Wawrinka, while his Swiss opponent kept his cool.
I just didn't capitalize at all on my opportunities. I had plenty of them, break points. It was a terrible conversion of the break points, just terrible from my side. And, you know, in the matches like this, if you don't use your opportunities, the other guy comes and takes it. And that's what he did. So that's why I said he was more courageous, because he stepped in and played aggressive, where I was kind of more waiting for things to happen, and that's it.
Meanwhile, in the women's singles final at the U.S. Open, Germany's Angelique Kerber beat the Czech Republic's Karolina Pliskova in three sets. The final score from New York, 6-3, 4-6, and 6-4. It was the second Grand Slam title of the year for Kerber, who also won the Australian Open. The 28-year-old Kerber is also the oldest woman to reach the number one world ranking for the first time. After beating Pliskova, Kerber talked about some of the changes she made to her game this year.
I was really trying to improving a lot of things. First of all, of course, my fitness, and then to being more aggressive and go for it when I have the chance, not just hitting the balls over the net, just playing my game, because I know that when I practicing, I can be aggressive and just make the transfer on the match court. That was the challenge, and also mentally, to being more positive, a little bit more stronger, and just focusing on the moment I am on court.
She overtook American star Serena Williams in the rankings after winning the women's singles title at the U.S. Open in New York.
You know, for me, Serena is one of the best players in the world. And I mean, she won so many Grand Slams, and she is really one of the strongest opponents for me. But there are also a lot of other great players behind me, and they are dreaming to winning Grand Slams as well, like me. So for me, it will be a tough challenge to being number one and to being there as long as I can. So I'm really looking forward for everything in the future.
Angelique Kerber talks about Serena Williams being one of the strongest opponents for her. Angelique and Serena played each other in the final of two Grand Slam tournaments this year. Kerber won in three sets at the Australian Open, but Serena came back and beat Kerber in straight sets in the Wimbledon final. Angelique Kerber talks about her future goals.
There are still a lot of more goals that I have in my career, but right now I try to enjoy every single moment. I mean, for me, I'm really proud to be the next German number one player in the world after Steffi, and to winning Grand Slams as well. That means a lot to me. So this is actually what I'm enjoying now, and I will looking forward what's left and what I can still win. I hope there will come a lot of more.
Angelique Kerber mentioned Steffi Graf. Kerber says she's always had a special place in her heart for Steffi.
When I was young, of course, Steffi was always my idol, because she's German, she played tennis, she won everything. But right now, I think I'm idol for the young players now. And I just try to being how I am and just staying positive and enjoying everything, and playing how I am and being the best I can be.
That's Angelique Kerber of Germany, who is ending 2016 as the world's number one ranked player in women's tennis. American star Serena Williams ends the year at number two, and Polish player Agnieszka Radwanska is number three. Meanwhile, American Madison Keys, who is ranked number eight in the world to end 2016, has announced she'll miss next month's Australian Open after having surgery on her left wrist. The tennis action gets underway January 16th in Melbourne, Australia. Well, there were notable sports deaths and retirements during 2016. And joining us now to talk about some of them is Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department. Dan, welcome back to Studio 22, and sporty seasonal greetings.
Hi, Sonny. It's good to be back again. And it feels like a long countdown to the end of 2016, but we're rounding the home stretch. We're on the bell lap. Only 3 days left in the year.
I like that. We're on the bell lap. Well, Dan, as we look back on 2016, arguably the biggest sports figure to die was former world heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali at the age of 74. Our VOA listeners will remember Ali also won an Olympic gold medal in 1960. I think that was the Rome Olympics. Another Olympic champion recently passed, didn't he, Dan?
The Ethiopian runner, Mirutz Yifter. He was known as Yifter the Shifter for his acceleration in the home stretch. He died in late December. He was 72 years old. He lived in Toronto for the second part of his life. He was a two-time gold medal winner, both in the 1980 Moscow Summer Olympics in the 5,000 and 10,000 meter races. And he also won the bronze medal in the 10,000 in 1972 in Munich. Interesting story, he missed out on his start in the 5,000 meter race because his coach failed to get him to the starting line on time, or else maybe he would have had another medal in his palmares, as they say.
Rest in peace, Miritz Yifter. Dan, who were some of the other notable sports personalities who died during 2016?
And 2016 was such a difficult year across the board. There were people who died from politics, like the former U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno, people who died from television and movies. Most recently, yesterday, the news came out about the woman who played Princess Leia in the Star Wars movies. That's
Carrie Fisher,
and everybody's sad about that. I actually saw the newest edition in the Star Wars pantheon over the Christmas break, the Rogue One movie, and she actually makes a tiny cameo in that, so that's kind of a nice tribute to her life. But in sports, there were people like Craig Sager, the longtime NBA sideline reporter for CNN and Turner Sports. One thing I learned during the obituaries for him, he died of cancer, he had leukemia, was that he was the first person to interview the home run champion, Hank Aaron, after he broke Babe Ruth's record. He ran onto the field with his recorder and interviewed Hank Aaron just after he touched home plate that day in Atlanta. That was pretty amazing. I think he was only 22 years old when he had the initiative to go up to Atlanta to be there just in case Aaron hit the home run. He covered his only NBA Finals game back in June when Cleveland and Golden State were playing through a special arrangement between Turner and ESPN. Sager never had a chance to cover the NBA Finals because his employer never had the rights to broadcast the final games of the season. So he got a chance to do that, and he was known for his good reporting and his flamboyant clothing choices. another reporter who was really well-regarded, we were just listening to your tennis recap, Bud Collins made his name as a columnist for the Boston Globe in the 1960s and went on to be known as, a sort of flamboyant dresser.
I was just going to mention that. Yeah,
he passed away. He was a longtime tennis writer and broadcaster and kind of brought the spectacle of the Grand Slam tennis matches into everybody's living room in the U.S. So he had a big role in making tennis more accessible to the U.S. audience in the 1980s in particular. A long list of other people, I mean, coaches and players, former player like Joe Garagiola, who was a pretty good baseball player in the 1950s, but became more famous as a broadcaster later in his career. He broadcast the baseball game of the week that was on TV.
Tony Kubek.
Yeah. World Series games. And really, somebody like me who came up, really started watching baseball in the 1980s. He was somebody who I associated with the game. So that's kind of a sad thing to remember as somebody who really brought me a slice of what baseball was like outside of my hometown of Cleveland. It's sort of sad to hear that he died. The list goes on. If you want to stick with baseball, you can talk about Jose Fernandez, the young baseball pitcher who died in a boating accident
late in
September.
Terrible tragedy.
Fernandez was seen as a guy who could really bridge the gap, I think, between the changing dynamic between the U.S. and Cuba. He was pretty well assimilated into American culture, considering he went to high school in the U.S. and he spoke English fluently. He was one of these players, like along with Bryce Harper, who was trying to kind of make baseball fun again with the competitiveness between the batter and the pitcher and posing after home runs and cheering after strikeouts. Sad to see that he's gone. The list goes on. I mean, Arnold Palmer, one of the icons of American sport.
Golfing great.
I'm sure you remember the way he would hit the ball and kind of stalk his prey. And he's also known as one of the great marketing success stories. He's somebody who brought the kind of the athlete to the forefront as far as sports marketing goes, where he became a brand himself. The Arnold Palmer drink.
That's right.
The mixture of iced tea and lemonade.
Very refreshing.
That's right. So Pat Summitt was the famous University of Tennessee women's basketball coach who won numerous NCAA college championships and helped mold a generation of basketball players that we know well now, especially on the Olympic level, if our international audience is familiar with some of these American players who've won gold medals. Pat Summitt was a huge part of their development. Gordie Howe, the NHL player, known as Mr.
Ice Hockey Great.
And the you know, it's a sad thing to go back and look at, see how these people who impacted their sports are not here anymore. And retirements as well.
Yeah, there were some major retirements this year, Dan. Tell us about a few of them.
Well, we had three big figures in the NBA, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. I think you can say those are probably three of the top five players from the 1990s into the 2000s. They all retired at the end of the last season. If you'll remember, Kobe Bryant, who was known for his strength in shooting and scoring, got 60 points in his last game for the Lakers. That was a pretty exciting moment to see him racking up the points in his final game after having three or four tough seasons in a row with injuries. Tim Duncan, five NBA titles. That's pretty amazing.
Great player.
He's sort of a guy who you don't see as being one of the best ever, but the fact that he played for 19 seasons and the San Antonio Spurs were so competitive during his career, it says a lot about what kind of player he was.
Nicknamed the Big Fundamental, and I think some of those fundamentals have carried over this year to the Spurs. They're again one of the top teams in the NBA.
Kevin Garnett, one of these high school success stories, kind of LeBron James followed in his footsteps. Kevin Garnett didn't go to high school. He came right into the NBA, and he had an impact with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He won a championship with the Boston Celtics, kind of helped the Celtics get back on top after some rocky seasons in the 90s and the first part of the 2000s, teaming with Paul Pierce and Ray Allen to help the Celtics get a title. The list goes on, and if you switch sports to the NFL, you've got Peyton Manning, who won two Super Bowls, one with his Indianapolis Colts, who he's most known for, and then the very last moments of his career with the Denver Broncos, he willed the team to victory in the Super Bowl back in February against the Carolina Panthers.
And he made some Super Bowl history. I think Manning is the oldest quarterback to win the Super Bowl trophy. He was 39 when they won the game. Now he's 40.
That's right. I mean, it's kind of sad to see people who were in college when I was in college. Now they're winding down their pro careers. Tiger Woods, I remember writing a column when I was in college saying, we're in the golden age of sports here for people who are born in the 70s. You have people like Peyton Manning finally winding down their careers.
Formula One auto racing also had a big retirement this year.
A much younger athlete, Nico Rosberg, was only 31 years old. He said he retired at the top of the mountain. He won a lot of races. He finally won the championship this past year. He decided he had had enough. Maybe we'll see him again. Who knows? But 31 is a pretty young age to call it a career. And even, you know, this year wouldn't be complete without talking about David Ortiz, the slugging first baseman and designated hitter for the Boston Red Sox. A lot has been said about Ortiz's impact in Boston, helping the Red Sox get back to being one of Major League Baseball's top-level teams after so many years of disappointment in the playoffs and the World Series. Ortiz was one of these players, along with Manny Ramirez and Pedro Martinez, that helped the Red Sox get back on top after the fans were disappointed so many years. And then another baseball icon is Vin Scully, who was the broadcaster for most well-known for the Los Angeles Dodgers and before that, the Brooklyn Dodgers. He made the trip out west with the team. He was known for calling playoff games and World Series games for the national broadcasters. There's a famous call of him doing his play-by-play on Kirk Gibson's famous home run against the Oakland A's.
That's right.
In the World Series in the 80s. He was 89 years old. His first game was in 1950, and his last game was this past October 2nd. So a lot to remember in 2016 as far as sports figures who are no longer on the field and no longer with us, sadly.
A lot to remember indeed. Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department. Thank you, Dan. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty seasonal greetings, Andrew.
Sporty seasonal greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you back at the mothership, VOA Mothership Studio 22.
Welcome back to the mothership. Andrew, what is trending on this Wednesday?
Well, on the topic of retirements, there was a big one that was announced today. Sir Bradley Wiggins, a famous British cyclist, has announced his retirement from the sport at the age of 36. So still pretty young, but a great career, as we're seeing people, as they're sharing the stats on social media, the first British winner of the Tour de France, first Brit to win 8 Olympic medals. And the tributes that are pouring in are fitting to that resume. People saying that he's a legend, an astonishing career. I think this one was my favorite because it's so British. It said, somebody tweeted out and said, "Congrats, Sir Wiggins, on a most fantastic career." But that Sir Wiggins is important because, of course, he did receive that honor. So that's at such a young age, too, speaks volumes about his success. Kind of fitting with what we were just talking about, one person tweeted out, said, "I saw Bradley Wiggins was trending and I thought he had died." So there was a little concern there, but no, he is still alive and well, but just retiring from the sport.
Sir Wiggins, can I perhaps be a bit more informal, Andrew, and call him Wiggo?
Wiggo, that's his nickname, and that's what we're getting a lot of, too, is congrats, Wiggo. Best of luck, Wiggo. That is, synonymous with his name, that nickname. So very great tributes coming in for a very great athlete.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, a story that we've been talking about really all year, Russia's doping, of course, around the Olympics time. We were talking about that with the question about what Russian athletes might be able to or might not be able to participate in the Olympics. They ended up not sending any of their Paralympic athletes. And there's some conflicting reports going back and forth online. New York Times had an article that said the Russian anti-doping officials admitted that the country's leaders were involved in the doping scheme. Russia has since backtracked on that and said, well, we didn't say that. We never admitted to any kind of doping. So there's a lot of back and forth on social media, who's telling the truth. And there's a lot of implications, as we've talked about, too, with the World Cup coming up in Russia in a few short years, with FIFA President Gianni Infantino coming out and saying that Russia will face, quote-unquote, necessary actions and sanctions. So we'll see what that means, but there's a lot of speculation. I think a lot of people on social media are saying, of course there was doping. I think people aren't buying the backtracking from Russian officials saying that they never knew about this or that the New York Times was incorrect. I think a lot of people assume that there was doping. It just remains to be seen how extensive it was, and I think that's something we're going to be talking about into next year and for years to come, especially as we get to that World Cup.
What else is trending on this Wednesday, Andrew?
Well, we talked the past few days about the holiday season and giving and some nice viral videos and some nice surprises for fans. We talked about Carmelo Anthony surprising that young fan who was dealing with cancer with a car, and he got to meet him. Well, there's a young football fan in Atlanta named Taylor Deckard. Taylor Deckard is 10 years old, and he's battling a heart condition. So he's in the hospital, and they asked him, "What do you want for Christmas?" Now, Taylor Deckard is a big Auburn University fan. He said, "I want to meet Cam Newton." Cam Newton, of course, is the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers in the National Football League. But before that, he was a college football quarterback for Auburn University. So Taylor Deckard says, "I want to meet Cam Newton." Cam Newton flies to Atlanta, charters a plane, flies down to Atlanta. And in this viral video, we see Taylor's parents saying, "Put down your iPad." He's playing with the iPad. He said, "Put down the iPad. We've got somebody to here who wants to talk to you." They pull back the curtain, and there's Cam Newton to surprise him. And Taylor, sitting there in the hospital bed, jumps up and gives him the biggest hug and just wraps his arm around him and buries his face in Cam Newton. And it is just such a nice moment, such a nice holiday surprise. People saying, you know, you can think what you want about Cam Newton if you don't like him as a player, but this is really heartwarming. And the Carolina Panthers tweeting out that video just saying, "That's our QB." So a really nice holiday moment from Cam Newton, and one of these really nice moments we're seeing from a lot of athletes surprising fans and doing some good around the holiday season.
Nice gift there by Cam Newton.
Absolutely.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew, and we'll see you again on Thursday.
Sounds good.
And that wraps up the December 28th holiday edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States values freedom of the press as a key component of democratic governance. Unfortunately, in too many places, the press has become a target of retaliation by those who feel threatened by freedom of expression and transparency in democratic processes. In its annual census of journalists imprisoned worldwide, the Committee to Protect Journalists, or CPJ, found that more journalists are jailed around the world today than at any time since the CPJ began keeping detailed records in 1990. As of December 1, 2016, 259 journalists were jailed this year, compared to the 199 behind bars worldwide in 2015. Turkey accounts for nearly a third of the global total. Amid an ongoing crackdown that accelerated after a failed coup attempt in July, Turkey jailed at least 81 journalists, accusing them of anti-state activity. In addition, more than 100 news outlets have been silenced. The jailing of journalists continues to be a global problem, with China, Egypt, Eritrea, and Ethiopia as some of the other worst offenders. This year marks the first time since 2008 that Iran was not among the top five worst jailers, as many of those sentenced in the 2009 post-election crackdown have served their sentences and been released. However, Tehran is still stifling press freedom by sending journalists to jail, including filmmaker Kayvan Karimi, who is serving a sentence of 1 year in prison and 223 lashes in relation to his documentary about political graffiti, Writing in the City. The press is too often a target of retaliation by governments that repress freedom of expression and transparency. The United States will continue to speak out for the protection of journalists and for their vital role in open societies and defending the truth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll have an encore showing of our program looking at the legacy of U.S. President Barack Obama. Join guest host Esther Githui Ewart and her panel as they examine President Obama's two terms as the U.S. Commander-in-Chief. The legacy of President Barack Obama on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is the youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.